Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Diva Strategies for Success, where every day I get to bring you a dynamic guest. And I am very excited today because I have a fabulous guest. Her name is Rhianna Ritter. She's an MBA and president of Ritter Accounting and Consulting Incorporated. Let me tell you a little bit about Rhianna. Rhianna was born and raised in beautiful South Lake Tahoe, California. She is the youngest of six siblings. She was privileged to have a lively family with lots of comedy. Rhianna enjoys people who adapt well to change, are environmentally conscious, and who have an attitude of gratitude. Growing up, she learned the importance of service and quality from her dad in his carpet cleaning business. She worked in restaurants and retail for 15 years. Attending college was never on her table, but she made it happen, earning a bachelor's degree in accounting in 2012 and a master's degree in business in 2017. She started her business to help her clients recognize opportunities and provide excellent customer and employee experiences. Upholding these values leads to higher profits naturally long term. She had lots of great experience. She worked in corporate accounting for a mid-sized restaurant company as a controller. And she decided to start her own business. She values learning, personal growth, dining out, hiking, golf, snorkeling, camping, travel, theme parks, singing, dancing, and spending time with friends and family. She is blessed with two beautiful children and an awesome husband. Welcome, Rhianna. I'm so happy to have you on the show today. How are you?
I'm doing well, Robbie. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. What was your work experience in education like before you got into accounting?
I started working when I was 15 for my dad's business, the carpet cleaning company. He paid me $5 an hour. And then once I got my driver's license, he gave me a truck and paid 25% commission. So that was a pretty good living for a teenager. But, you know, that wasn't going to be my forever job. I injured myself lifting some of the equipment. So from there, I worked in retail and restaurants. I did all positions from dishwasher to cook to customer service rep to grocery stocker, busser, server, trainer, supervisor, up to accounting assistant, staff accountant, and then controller. But that was after my accounting degree. So most of my jobs, I was promoted within 3 months of starting, but I was not great at taking direction. I was not afraid to let my bosses know if I disagreed with their policies, and I could always see these simple solutions, but people don't always want to change rapidly, and they don't always have the option when they're working for a big company, so that would get frustrating to me. So I changed jobs pretty frequently through my early 20s, and when it came time to get an accounting job, that didn't look great on my resume. I had to take a payroll clerk job out of college because I had the education but not the accounting specific experience.
What made you go into accounting?
It's an interesting choice for me because I'm a creative person. My interests were always musical theater and the arts, but my parents had told me that those were for entertainment, and I couldn't really make a living doing them. And I believed them after a while. They had a pretty negative relationship with money, like many adults. And I just knew I didn't want money limiting what I could do. So I decided that being a professional was the way to go. When it comes to college, qualifying for financial aid, students have to be considered independent from their parents' income. And that doesn't happen, at least in California, until they're 24 years old. So I didn't see how I could afford to attend a four-year university without financial aid. So I went to community college while I was waiting. It was only $7 a unit in Tahoe. It's gone up, but it's still pretty low for most community colleges in California. I ended up with about 230 units by the time I transferred to the four-year university. I took all different subjects, considered all different majors, teacher, doctor, geologist, chemist. I finally decided on winemaking because my favorite classes were cooking, wine education, and chemistry. And then prerequisites for winemaking included two of the first level accounting classes. I took those classes and it just clicked with me. It was easy for me, and I liked the black and white that it is. So then I thought about pay and job openings and job security, and I thought accounting, I'd have more luck than with winemaking. So I still think I'll make wine. I'm hoping to have a winery one day.
So you haven't given up on some of the things that you still want to do.
Right. I always had an analytical mind. So as a kid, I loved school. I excelled in it. But I had too many different interests to say, oh, this is the one thing I was meant to do. So in kindergarten, I decided to go to college. As a kid, when I envisioned my adult self, I thought either a pop star or a businesswoman. So my family were Jehovah's Witnesses, and I did not enjoy disturbing people in their homes on Saturday mornings, having doors slammed in my face. I didn't enjoy having to stand out for all the things I wasn't allowed to do. And there was some turmoil at home, so school was where I could escape all of that. And because I saw it as an escape, I was interested and it came easy to me. I liked helping my classmates with their schoolwork. Building positive relationships and teaching were things that I really enjoyed. Learning and growth are things that I'm passionate about. I don't think anybody can possibly know everything about any subject. There's always a different way of looking at something. So accounting is all about measurement, and growth I don't think happens without measurement. I use measurements in every aspect of my life every day. I think about, you know, how I talk to my daughter and how what I did differently today than yesterday to get a better response and how I could repeat that tomorrow. And so that's what accounting is, measurement analysis. And it's a great career for continuous learning, not just in accounting practices, but I learn about different people, their businesses, and different industries and building wealth. So it can be very fun.
Does having a good accountant matter? Why does it matter to have a good accountant?
When it comes to accounting, when I talk with people, I've found that they see overwhelm, fear, and lots of math. And there is math. I mean, we're looking at numbers all day, but it's really basic math. And clerks with low-level education and proper leadership can do that part, not trigonometry or calculus. Unless you're doing advanced analytics, you're not even using statistics. So basic accounting is more compartmentalizing data, comparing apples to apples, making sure you only have apples, and then evaluating the results for reasonableness, checking your work, and using software. Senior accounting positions need formal education, an analytical mind, leadership skills, and we have to be able to look at the big picture after all the little details. It's easy for me when I start explaining it. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish that.
Oh, okay. It's easy for me, but when I start explaining it to my clients, their heads spin. they get, you know, I get involved in teaching and they're like, well, we're moving a little fast. So there's some research when there are changes to accounting standards or tax codes, but there are core principles that always apply. The goal is to evaluate the financial performance of an entity. It's to look at what you're doing and decide if it's effective or not. And then you change your ineffective behavior and repeat the effective behavior until that behavior becomes ineffective and you have to start again. But it's the main goal is not to prepare a tax return. That's required, but that's not where the value is. A lot of people see tax savings as this big cash flow tool because they may not be putting away money during the year to pay the taxes. And that has its place, but I mean, no one should pay more in taxes than they absolutely must. And there are ways to minimize that burden. The tax code is written in such a way as to encourage taxpayers to engage in transactions that boost the economy. And those transactions provide the greatest tax relief through deductions. So having a tax preparer that has that mindset and is constantly learning is much better than using TurboTax on your own or just a tax preparer who doesn't fully understand what your goals are and how your business operates. And having a plan will help you maximize your tax deductions along with investing. That helps with tax deductions too. I find a lot of people are afraid of investing, and I think that's a mistake. I feel like in that case, people are allowing fear to control their financial future instead of using logical, capable minds to learn to become wealthy. It's really unfortunate that sensationalized media stories are where people get a lot of information today. Having a good, sound goal in mind, a plan, and working with your financial advisor, accountant, and attorney can help you adapt to changing environments and make you wealthy.
How do you help your clients?
My clients have a variety of requests. Some just want to learn how to do accounting. I teach them or their employees software and core concepts, how to open different tax accounts in different states, things like that. But most people just want to know where their numbers are throughout the year. So I prepare financial statements. I do their bookkeeping. And then when it's time to talk about the numbers, they're frequently like, no, that can't be right. Where is all that money? So then we, you know, walk through it and highlight some of the larger transactions. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. Some clients just need help using the software. Some need a mindset shift if their business growth is stagnant. I am a truth teller, and sometimes that's unpleasant, but I feel that if we don't hold ourselves accountable, we won't reach our greatest potential. So failure is awesome when we learn from it, but people who refuse to look at their behavior and change it, and then they keep repeating the same behavior, will just keep failing. So we need accurate measurements to learn from our failures and turn them into successes. Many clients just miss compliance laws and administrative requirements, which opens them up to fines, penalties, lawsuits, wasted time, effort, and even theft. So when I'm doing the books and I see that they need something in one of those areas, I do an assessment of how much help they need, and then we talk about doing advisory work.
That's great. What do you find particularly challenging about your business?
My relationship and service levels are different with every single client. I have a variety of industries. So I often find people want to know the prices right from the beginning. And when that's the case, it tends to mean they're just getting quotes from multiple people and they're going to choose the lowest quote. Accounting services are not a commodity. It's not something where price should be the number one factor. Clients almost never express their needs accurately. In many cases, they don't know that they need a particular service, and they definitely don't know how much work it entails. So accounting for me goes far beyond bookkeeping and helping people plan for taxes. Whatever their problem is, I look for a solution, and it's hard to put a price on that, so that's why I have business coaches. I believe that as business owners, we can all benefit from some coaching. And I found that some of the things I was advising my clients to do, I was not applying in my own business. So I was putting relationships ahead of business sense, doing things for free. And that's nice, but it's kind of a girly behavior. And if I go out of business because I'm running it like it's a charity, I can't help anyone.
That's true. What surprised you about entrepreneurship?
Surprisingly, it was everything. I grew up with it. My dad's an entrepreneur. I know how to run a business. We had family friends that were entrepreneurs. I worked at their offices. My education and experience had prepared me for success, but I had no idea what it would be like to be everything in the company. So president of the whole thing, accounting, finance, HR, marketing, operations. I knew a little bit about what those things entailed from my corporate days, which helped, but managing cash flow has been a great lesson to me. I always made it work before, but after getting used to a regular salary, entrepreneurship gave me a whole new perspective. And so now I can appreciate what small business owners are dealing with every day, especially with a pandemic. It's a lot of pressure on a good day.
What have you learned since starting your business?
Foremost, that it is relationship building, which was surprising to me. I expected people to base their decision on whether to work with me on my resume. It's much less objective than that. It's an emotional decision. So when you think about interviewing for a job, your resume gets reviewed first, and then they look at your personality fit and do evaluations and interviews. Entrepreneurship seems to be the reverse. People want a referral or to have met and connected with you on a personal level, and I just didn't realize how much that played into the decision-making until very recently.
Entrepreneurs just starting.
I would say that your story is the most important thing you can get out there to draw in ideal clients. You do not want to work with just everybody, so not targeting your audience is a big mistake. Even if you see yourself as desperate to get cash in, when I quit and started this, I didn't have any savings. I just was unhappy in my job situation, and I had no idea how I was going to make this work. So I have my skills and my education and determination, but I had to learn new skills, get out of my comfort zone, and be willing to change and do it quickly. I would say don't rely solely on your resume to sell your services, because it's your story that people care about. And then secondly, to utilize your network. I don't think I've done that fully. I have so many resources when I really look at my network that sometimes it just becomes overwhelming and I don't ask for help. But I think it's important not to be afraid to ask. It's good to know your strengths, but more importantly, to know your weaknesses, not to focus on weaknesses, but just to get help in those areas. We often think we can't afford to get help, but if you're determined, you can make it happen. Showing up and asking for help is imperative for entrepreneurs.
Well, how can people reach you? Do you have a website? How can they get in touch with you?
I do. I have a website, and it's www.ritterac.com /contact. Has contact information, and people can schedule a consultation there directly from the website. They can also call and make an appointment with my receptionist or send an email.
As a woman owning your own business, what would you say to other women? And we still have a little over 10 minutes.
Okay. I would say, from what I've learned, to stop negative self-talk. You probably are not even aware that it's there, but it is. And getting help and retraining your thoughts toward positivity will make a huge difference in all aspects of your life. This may not apply to every woman, but it unfortunately applies to more than it should. So for me, help has been in the form of business coaches. I read a couple great books. One of them was called The Year of No Nonsense by Meredith Atwood. And another was called Girl, Wash Your Face by Rachel Hollis. Those were pretty eye-opening. It helps you to know that somebody understands and can relate to what you're dealing with. Also, writing your thoughts and practicing meditation. I was never a person that could sit still and meditate, and I was not somebody who kept a journal, but in reading those books and after going through some coaching, I found that writing down what I'm thinking and asking myself if it's true is really eye-opening, and it helps me to change the way I'm thinking. I would also say don't give everything away for free, and you don't have to discount everything. We are all worth more than we think we are. And again, meditation, writing, books, and talking with other women who are business owners. I belong to some great networks that are women's networks. Global Society of Female Entrepreneurs is one. And all of these women have really awesome stories, and they help us to put things in perspective and know that somebody can relate. I don't know if you've ever heard of imposter syndrome. I had never heard of that until I went to a QuickBooks conference. But as high-achieving women, we might feel like we don't belong where we are, we don't deserve our success, and everybody's going to find out we're in the wrong place. I definitely thought that when I was a kid. I talked about going to college, and my dad said, "Oh, we're not college people, we're ground pounders." And so I was like, huh. So I didn't notice it, but I guess I grew up thinking that my whole life. So when I was in college, I was kind of afraid that someone was going to tap me on the shoulder and be like, "You're a ground pounder, you don't belong here." So it's funny, but we have to be careful what we say to our kids, because they, when they're really young, they can't really tell what's, you know, really true or a joke or whatever. So imposter syndrome is common among accountants and high-achieving women in particular. So there are things that we have to deal with from childhood or some other experience that make us feel that way. But it's not the truth, and working through it helps us to move on. It took time and practice and friends and coaches for me to figure that out, but it eventually came up, and I was able to deal with it. And so now I'm feeling, you know, much more positive and strong. Another thing that women tend to have is perfectionism. Nobody knows everything, and it's okay to admit when we don't know something and tell people we'll get back to them. But getting defensive and pretending to know it's really obvious when someone's doing that. So trying to be perfect is counterproductive. It makes us miserable, and it's not necessary. No one has it all, and no one needs to appear to have it all. I see a lot of moms who are working and have kids, and they're trying to do sports and do everything that life requires, and then look perfect and feeling stressed about it. And I just feel terrible when I see that, because it's not realistic. And then I would also say, do what makes you happy and makes you feel strong. And if that is making other people happy, then I think you should ask yourself if you have lost yourself in busyness. I have two little kids. I find myself exhausted and annoyed that I constantly have to put myself after them. But I don't really have to. I just do. So then there's running a business and, oh, I'm supposed to have a relationship with my husband and then friends and family. And sometimes I have to just turn off the phone or not respond. It's necessary to make time for ourselves. We do have our own identities, and I don't think our identities should be wrapped up in other people. I need to get better at making time for myself. I'm just learning these things. I had to take notice that my busyness was really just a way to avoid looking at myself and asking if I'm really doing what makes me happy. And I wasn't. I had to stop being a perfectionist and procrastinating and living in fear. I needed to start developing my team and delegating and dealing with all that comes with that, mistakes and, you know, possibly disappointment from clients. But it is better than doing everything yourself. I have a long way to go, but I am not so irritated and overwhelmed. I'm more content. And contentment used to seem to me like climbing Mount Everest. I doubted I would ever get there. But and it's definitely an ongoing thing that needs practice, and positivity needs practice, and you have to be filling your mind with these positive things all the time, or it's easy to go back into old habits where you don't feel content or happy.
So let's tell them again how they can get in touch with you.
So my office phone number is 855-459-4900. And email is always good. You can email service@ritterac.com. And then the website works too. It's www.ritterac.com/contact. And all of the contact information is there. And you can make an appointment directly from the website.
Brianna, we have 2 minutes left. What do you see coming for you in the future? What are some of the things you would like to accomplish? We have about 2 minutes.
I would like to take some companies paperless. I know we just dealt with having to learn how to use a lot of Zoom and people working from home with the pandemic. And I think that in some ways, those were good things to learn, how to use technology, how to work from home, because we kind of mess up the environment by printing too much, driving too much. We could see less traffic and more productivity and improve the environment that way. So now that we all kind of have an idea of what it's like to be paperless, it would be great to try to be more mindful of it and seeing everyday life that way. So there are some mid-sized, large companies that are not the most efficient. So those are the types of projects that I really am passionate about and want to get into. And also helping the small businesses around here to grow and to grow efficiently so that they're not wasting a lot of time and resources.
Well, I want to thank you. We're down to just seconds. So thank you so much for being a guest. Great information. Loved the interview. And we'll have to do it again in a few months and see how things are going. And
that
keep
sounds
going.
Great.
You do an amazing job. I happen to know that personally. So you're in a great account and you're great with people. And you absolutely do listen to your clients and you give them great advice. So thank you again. And you have a
thank
great day.
Thank you so much, Robbie. Thank you. You too. It was great being here.
Bye now.
Bye.